You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, thanks for being here. Thanks for continuing to make efforts to improve, save or improve your marriage and or improve your marriage. And we're going to be talking about something that may seem just a little bit off topic. So let me start back a little bit with where this entered my life. Now, understand that I came from training as a therapist, as a regular therapist. So I had lots of background information on how our mind works and how our psyche works and how our psychology works. And thought I had pretty good idea of how to help myself, how to, you know, really take good care of myself. And so a number of years back now, about a decade ago, a little over that, I had written Save the Marriage. I had created that program and was working with people on a regular basis. And I wanted to continue working on relationships. And so my brother-in-law and I set out to create a program about family businesses, how to work through the relationship issues in family businesses. My brother-in-law is a financial planner. I'm trained as a family therapist, and so we put those skills together. And the way we decided to do that was to create a video. So the way we had to do that, because of his location being away from here, is he had to come to my location. We set up the shoot, and we spent about 2.5 days of solid work to get that going, meaning we were doing filming for 12 to 15 hours during those days. And if you haven't ever watched a video being created or a TV show and kind of watched it from a distance, what you'll notice is that people are put in very uncomfortable postures in order to look good, because, you know, they kind of have to be close together. So let me tell you one other part. Back then, the idea of me being on camera was absolutely stressful and terrifying. I'm an introvert by nature, and to have myself out there for everybody to see is always a challenge. And so that's one of the things that I've worked to overcome. My brother-in-law, on the other hand, is quite the extrovert. He loves to be on camera, loves to be on. And so during our first few hours of shooting, one of the things that the production people were getting me to do was to step more into energy and him to step down out of energy. And we were trying to balance that. And it was extremely stressful and exhausting weekend for me. And one of the things that we had is, you may not know, but I'm about 6'4", with very long legs. And so they had my posture turn in weird directions in order to look like I was having a close conversation with my brother-in-law. And so at the end of that time, I found that I was a bit sore in the legs. And so one of the things that happened after that is that my legs began to ache worse. My hips began to hurt. And that pain began to move up and down my body. And so for the first few days, I just thought it was because I'd been twisted in these weird positions, and I was just exhausted, I thought, because of the filming. And so over the next little bit, I really kind of noticed as my body was deteriorating, my back was hurting, my legs were aching, my hips were killing me. And so finally, my wife convinced me to go to the doctor. Well, I went to the doctor, and he pretty much decided that I probably had stressed myself, and that was it. Maybe a little infection. It would go away. It didn't go away. It got worse, much worse. In fact, it led to the biggest health crisis of my life, where at one point they really didn't think I would recover. They thought I would be chronically disabled and then be killed by the illness. I had a condition called sarcoidosis, which is an autoimmune issue. Now, you may be asking the question, how does this have anything to do with saving your marriage? So let me continue just a bit more and stick with me. One of the things that I realized was that what compromised my immune system was my stress level. My stress level was extreme. It was extremely high. I was completely exhausted, worn out from the planning of this, worn out from the creation of this, flat worn out. And so what likely happened is, because my immune system was almost completely offline, I just caught a little virus and the virus triggered my immune system to go into overdrive. When it triggered that immune system to go into overdrive, it sent me into an autoimmune crisis. And sometimes those become such runaway events that you can't stop them. I was very fortunate. My fortune was that I was so sick that I actually burned through the illness much more quickly than if it had been chronic. As you can hear me talking now, I've recovered. I have a few little places of pain every now and then and some tingles in my skin, but for the most part, I have no repercussions from that. I was very fortunate. It could have created blindness and liver problems and heart problems and lung problems and eventually death. So I got lucky. Now, here's the interesting thing. My brother-in-law did not suffer any of that. We had both been in the same situation, exposed to the same people, and he had a great time. He had a ball doing this. It was his time to be on camera. He loved doing that. I, on the other hand, found it to be extremely stressful and terrifying. Notice the exact same experience of having the filming happen, of all of that going on, for me was stressful and anxiety-provoking and extremely terrifying. For him, it was energizing and a chance for him to be the ham he is on camera. And yet, it was the exact same event. What was the difference between the two of us? It was not the stimuli around us. It was not the events around us. It was not anything around us. It was our internal processing of those external events. So this is where it begins to turn to not just about your marriage, but about life. This is about what our thoughts do to us. And let me say right off the bat, this is not about the power of positive thinking. A thought, whether it's positive or negative, is still just a thought. So the power of positive thinking has very little validity because most people find that they revert back to negative thinking very quickly. So this is not anything to do with power of positive thinking. This is not about saying whatever's going on with you is your fault. I'm not saying it was my fault that I got sick. Now looking back, I see some places where I can take responsibility for being more healthy going forward, but this is not about assigning blame for anything that's happened. This is not also about how everything around you is an illusion that you create. This is not that. So I want you to kind of listen all the way through and suspend your judgment for just a few moments and let me make my case about what I want to talk about, and that is thoughts. Your thinking. My thinking, all of our thinkings, that's why we get in trouble. Our thoughts get us into trouble. So let's just kind of step back for a minute and ponder that fact and why that's the case. So let me introduce you to your mind. Your mind does only really two things, primarily one thing, but it has the opportunity of doing something else. The one thing it does is it creates thoughts. It's the creator of your thoughts. And there is no way that you can turn that off or want to turn that off. We are thinking creatures. And our mind is what allows us to do great things. Everything that has been made, created, is at a starting point, a thought. If you look at a great picture of art, it started as a thought, an inspiration for someone. If you look at a great building, a beautiful building, it started as a thought in someone's mind. If you look at a company, it started as a thought in somebody's mind. As I sit here and look on my desk at the computers and the monitor and all these other pieces of technology, they all started as a thought in somebody's mind. But the other things that start as thoughts in somebody's mind are the fact that they need to destroy other people, that they need to hurt other people, that they need to take things that are not theirs, that the world is a horrible place to be, that nothing good ever comes out of it. That notice the positive thoughts of creation and the negative thoughts come from the same place. Your mind creates thoughts. That's just what a mind does. Some are great, some are not so great. Some are helpful, some are not so helpful. That's just what our mind does. It's how it's designed, and there's no stopping it. And that's a good thing. The problem is when we forget that process. The problem is when we forget how much of our reality is created by a thought, by something running through our mind that we begin to perceive as reality. The thought is just a thought until we make it a reality. The mind has another little piece to it. It's the observer. If you just step back for a moment and watch yourself think, that's the observer part of your mind. That's all it does. It's the part that we tap into when perhaps you meditate or just do some reflective thinking. You're stepping back and looking at what your mind is doing. Unfortunately, that part of the mind we don't use so much. We use that thought piece. We get so close to the thoughts that they are so in front of us that we're not stepping back and examining them. You know, as I'm sitting here, I'm holding my hand in front of me. And when we don't use that observer mind, it's like that hand is over my eyes and all I can see is that hand. But the observer mind lets me pull that hand away a little bit and look at it in detail and go, huh, look at that hand. That hand is not what's blocking my vision. It's out here and I'm observing it. It's the same with that observational part of your mind, the capacity of stepping back and going, what am I thinking about? I remember a number of years ago, I had a client, and I was walking her through this exact same material. Now, I'll tell you that I discovered this material about the same time, right after I got sick, when I was trying to find some ways of helping my life to de-stress. I came upon this. And what was interesting was I have studied lots of psychology, and yet this idea was lacking from my understanding until then. If you already have it, great. I'm just giving you a reminder. If you don't have it, I want you to just to listen to what I'm saying. It can challenge some of our basic assumptions, but just listen. And so I was working with this client. She was in my office, and she was extremely stressed out, very anxious, very angry, very upset. And she kept telling me all the reasons she was that way. And it was all external to her as she saw it. It was all out there. And I wanted to help her understand it. So I said, you know, I think a lot of it, what's going on is caused by your thinking. And she said, oh, I don't think. I'm not that kind of person that's always thinking in my head. And that's not me. And I said, oh, well, here's the thing. We all are. The problem is we forget that we're thinking. And when we forget that we're thinking, then we assume that our thoughts are A, real, and B, accurate. And they are not real. They're not accurate. They're incomplete. And they are figments of our imagination. They are creations of our mind. That's what our mind is doing. Well, she wasn't ready to accept that. And so all I asked her to do was to leave that week and observe herself thinking. And she said, well, that's fine, but I'm not going to notice anything because I don't think. A week later, she came back to my office absolutely furious with me because I had pointed out how busy her mind was, how loud her mind was, how much chatter there was in her head. And the interesting thing is we all kind of cozy up to our mind. We all cozy up to those thoughts, and we treat them as if they are our best friend, that they are our company through the day. And yet, if any friend was talking to us the same way we think about ourselves, we would get rid of that friend in an instant. But because it happens in our own mind, we forget to notice that. So your mind is simply the source of your thoughts, good, bad, just creator of helpful and not helpful thoughts. That's just what happens. Sometimes people have come to me and said, you know, don't you think couples should share everything on their mind? And my response is absolutely not, because there's a whole lot of garbage that goes on in your mind that doesn't need to be shared with anyone. It doesn't even need to be pondered by you that much. And if we share everything on our mind, what we're sharing is a lot of times just trash that our mind's creating. So no, I don't think that you should share everything on your mind, nor should you buy into everything on your mind. So our mind is the creator of our thoughts. And then our thoughts create our emotional life. And that is particularly true when we forget that we're having thoughts. Every time you have emotions, it's based in what you're thinking about. Notice that when we were doing that filming, I was feeling fear and anxiety. My brother-in-law was feeling exhilaration and excitement. The exact same thing was going on, but how we were thinking about it was different. I was thinking about how much I did not want to be on camera. He was thinking about how fun it was to be on camera. Our thoughts were weaving our emotional life. I've done this experiment with many audiences, and I kind of quit doing it. And the reason I quit doing it is because I would lose the audience for a good 10 minutes. And what I would do is I would say, I'm going to give you 30 seconds to make yourself as angry as possible. And so find a way of building up that anger in you. And after it was over, I asked people, and the problem was they were at that point very angry, and I began to feel that anger towards me. And what I pointed out was the fact that if they noticed, the way they got to anger was by thinking about something that made them angry. Their thoughts about that, recalling something in the past that made them angry, allowed them to re-experience that anger. But what they fail to see is that's what happens in day-to-day life with our emotions. We're thinking about something. You know, you can sit there and ponder that lovely child in front of you, right? That's the teenager, your teenager at home, and you can think about all the ways they drive you crazy and get angry with them and frustrated with them. But if you think about that little baby you held in your arms and fell deeply in love with, your thoughts about that suddenly change how you feel. When we have an emotion, it's based in a thought. The problem is when we forget that it's based in a thought. We begin to believe that whatever's going on in our head is true, and whatever emotions we're feeling are true. We're led down a path where we forget that we're thinking. See, the mind is an amazing thing to create these thoughts. The failure is for us to realize that they're just thoughts. A thought is just a thought. If you imagine that there is a line, on one end is thinking that every thought is reality, and on the other end is thought recognition, that you recognize that a thought is just that. It's just a thought. It might be a useful thought. It might be a pretty good reflection of what's going on, but it's still just a thought. And we all live in that spectrum. Some days we move higher and lower. Some days we are less aware that our thoughts are real, and some days we are more aware that our thoughts are real. And one of the ways that that's impacted is what's going on around us. You know, if we have low energy, if we've been exhausted by things, if there's been a lot of stuff that's been on our mind, if our thoughts have pulled us down, we begin to forget more quickly that a thought's a thought. Take a big walk, write down in a journal, talk to a friend, and suddenly you begin to recognize, oh, that's just what I'm thinking in my head. So our emotional state created by that thought can go up and down and push us up and down that scale. But the more we're able to recognize a thought as a thought, not a thought is wrong, but a thought is a thought, it's just a thought, the more likely we are for our emotions to follow us. I believe that our emotional health is more like a cork. It floats to the surface when we get out of the way, and what keeps it in the way? Our thoughts. Our thoughts push it down. Our thoughts push that cork down into bad feelings, into bad or not useful emotions. And at that point, if we get out of our way and recognize it's a thought, it pops back up to the surface. Our emotional well-being, our psychological well-being can pop straight back up to the surface when we get out of our own way. Our emotions it's not that they're not important. You know, I've had some people when I've been talking about this who have said, so you don't think emotions are important at all? I mean, there's no reason for that. They are absolutely important. First of all, emotions are one of those places where we connect with other people. Not in the lower emotions, but in the higher emotions. And when I say lower and higher, I'm not talking about good or bad. But let's just assume that higher emotions like joy, contentment, happiness, and I would put happiness as getting close to that line because happiness is often based on something that's happened, some event that's out there. But joy and contentment, satisfaction, meaning, all those places where we can derive and feel energized by, as opposed to when we get to the lower feelings of anger, of frustration, of resentment. When we get to those levels of jealousy and those, some of those lower pieces that pull us down emotionally as opposed to raise us up. So I'm using that spectrum of emotions from the higher emotions to lower emotions, not from good to bad, but higher to lower. When we are aware of how we're feeling, it lets us know how we're thinking. If I use that as a barometer, then those emotions are very important to me. when my family goes to the beach, we visit my parents' home at the beach, and my father has a barometer that hangs in the hallway. Now, a barometer is a measurement of pressure in the atmosphere. And so, you know, if you notice the high pressure systems that they talk about on the Weather Channel, it means that good weather's coming in. If you're under a high pressure system, it's going to be good weather. If you're under a low pressure system, then it's going to rain and turn ugly. And so when I get to the house, the first thing I do is I check the barometer. And I see where it is, and I mark, there's a little needle that I can mark where the current pressure is. So I just put that needle on it and it marks where the current pressure is. Now, as I go back and forth down that hallway, I can just take a glance. And if I see that it's at the needle or above the needle, I can pretty much guess that it's going to be a good beach day, that we're going to have a good time outside, that I can go paddleboard and maybe go for a run. But if it drops below that needle, then I know that maybe we need to think about going to the movies or to the mall or maybe rent some movies at home and do something because the weather's likely to not be so good. It's a way of reading the highs and lows of the pressure that then correspond to what's going to happen in the weather. Well, your emotions are your barometer to your thinking. If you are feeling satisfied, if you're feeling contented, if you're feeling happy, if you're feeling those higher emotions, if you're feeling joy, you don't have to think about what you're thinking about. You don't have to step into that observer place. I don't even worry about what's going on in my head if that's how I'm feeling. But when I get to the place where I'm feeling anxious or I'm feeling angry or I'm feeling resentment or I'm feeling hurt, then I need to ask the simple question, what am I thinking about? What is it that I'm thinking about that's leading to those emotions? And as soon as I do that, I've stepped back just a little bit. I've stepped into my observer mind, and I begin to look at, oh, I'm thinking about this. Now, there may be some reality to that thought, but I'll promise you it's not all reality. Just imagine for a minute that you are driving in your car. You're downtown wherever you live, and you pull up to a stoplight. And you look over at the stoplight and you see this person who is looking in your direction with a very angry expression on that person's face. And so you continue through the intersection and you begin to wonder what it is you did to that person. What happened that made them angry with you? Were you too close to them? Had you pulled over the white line and were blocking the intersection? Did you know them and didn't recognize them, and they were hurt that you didn't recognize them? And so you start thinking all these thoughts about who they are and what you might have done to them. And suddenly you realize that you've gone block after block after block, not even noticing others around you because you're lost in your thoughts and you're feeling bad about yourself. Well, if you were able to rewind and look over, you would notice that angry expression was really a very concentrated expression because in their hands is a long white cane with a red tip at the end. They were trying to figure out when it would be safe to cross, did not see you at all because of their blindness, were focused on getting safely across the street. But when you didn't see that piece, your thoughts led you to an emotional reaction. And here's the thing, we don't ever see everything. We always see parts of the world that we want to see and miss parts of the world we don't want to see or don't know how to see. We create a paradigm based in our core beliefs. Now, our core beliefs are what create those thoughts. And I'm not going to talk a lot about the core beliefs now. I do cover, if you want to know how to change your core beliefs, it's a little more difficult than just addressing your thoughts, but it can be done. You just need a framework for it. And you can actually find that framework in my Kindle book. The Kindle book is at savethemarriage.com/Kindle. You can get it either as Kindle or now Amazon has it as a softback. So either one. It's How to Save Your Marriage in 3 Simple Steps. And that will give you a whole section on how do you change your core beliefs. Because your core beliefs do weave your thoughts. No doubt about it. But today we just want to talk about thoughts. It's a much easier place of dealing with what's going on. Okay, so what we've established is your emotional life is driven by your thoughts. Your thoughts are driven by your mind. Your mind is just weaving those thoughts. And so if all is good, if you're expressing those or feeling those higher emotions, you're feeling contented, satisfied, excited, joyous, whatever, those higher emotions, then don't even worry about what's going on in your mind. But when you're feeling down, when you're feeling angry, when you're feeling resentment, when you're feeling the lower emotions, jealousy, upset, rage, then I want you to step back and say, what am I thinking about? Now, as I said earlier, that does put you into observer place. You're now looking at your thoughts. And once you have established that that thought is just a thought, and you're willing to say, and I'm probably not perceiving everything just so, I'm probably missing some things. For instance, sometimes somebody will think that their spouse is really angry with them, you know, and they'll have all these thoughts and they're wondering what they did wrong, and really the spouse had a bad day at work. That's how we weave our reality through our thoughts. It's not that there's not a reality. As I said earlier, I'm not saying that everything's an illusion. Our perception of everything is not exactly factual. One day I was talking about this and somebody said, so you don't think anything's real? And I said, oh, I do think things are real. And I was standing behind a table. I said, I believe that you and I can agree on this table. Now, you know, if we really want to get down to it, some physics theorists would tell us that that table is mostly empty space that we all are just kind of commonly agree upon as a table. But let's just set that aside and say this is a table, and I'm standing behind it. Now, I could possibly say to myself, isn't it nice that somebody put this table here so I can set my stuff on it, and it'll hold it? Or I could just as easily say, how dare someone put this in my way so I can't cross the room here? Either one are created in my thoughts. The reality of the table is there, but how I perceive what that table is doing there and why it's there and who put it there, those are based in my thoughts. So what we're doing is weaving our thoughts about reality, not weaving reality, just our thoughts and our perceptions about it and how we respond to that emotionally. Okay, so hopefully at this point you're kind of agreeing with me that your emotional life and your life in general is ruled by those thoughts, that when we're pulled into our thoughts, it leads us into places that aren't exactly accurate with reality. Maybe some accuracy to it, but not entirely. Think about how many times you've been extremely upset about something only to find that there's some other facts after it that change how you understand it. Your upset was based on your thoughts about it. One of the things I recognized after that event in that filming is that stress isn't always, always, always an internal reaction to an external event. It has nothing to do with that event directly. It's our internal reaction to it. When I go to an amusement park, I'm looking at the roller coaster and my son and I are going, ooh, that looks so exciting. My wife and daughter are going, ooh, that looks scary. The exact same thing is there. In one of us, or two of us, it creates excitement, and the other two, it creates stress. Same event, same possibility, very different interpretation. Okay, so all of our stress is going to be based on our internal reaction to that. Now, that's an important thing because as we're working to save marriage or to deal with work or to deal with teenagers, we recognize just that. The reality is that our internal reaction is what's driving the emotional response. Our internal reaction is what's causing the issue, not what's going on out there. What's out there is just happening. How we're interpreting it, that's up to us. Okay, so now hopefully we've kind of established that piece and you're kind of on board with me. And then you're going, okay, so what do I do? Okay, so the steps of dealing with this are very simple. This is not going to be complicated. The first step is to become aware of your thoughts. You become aware of your thoughts by looking at your emotions. When your emotions are low, just ask that simple question. What am I thinking about? What's going on in my head? Be willing to, even when you come up with a thought and say, of course I'm thinking that because that's reality, be willing to accept the fact that it may not be all of reality. It may be only a piece of reality. That there are some core beliefs that are driving that thought for you to interpret in certain ways. So the first thing is to become aware of the thoughts. Notice what you're thinking about. Then the second piece is very simple. Just recognize them as thoughts. This is when you move towards that thought recognition point on that spectrum. Instead of thought as reality, we often get pulled into that thought as reality. But if you can just say, okay, that's just a thought, that puts you into a thought recognition. It's not necessarily reality. It may have some representation, but it's not necessarily reality. Okay, so you say that's a thought is a thought. I'm not saying a thought is nothing. I'm not saying a thought is unimportant. I'm just saying a thought is simply that. It is a thought. That's what it is. And then you practice letting them go. Imagine that thought as more like being a leaf that falls onto the creek and gets washed downstream. Remind yourself a thought's a thought and let it go. Now, this is going to take some practice, and this is why it's going to take some practice. You have been taught differently than this. You've been taught that you really need to attend to those thoughts and you need to deal with them and think things through. And so what we're used to doing is what some people say is, you know, entertaining a thought. And I love that phrase because entertaining a thought means that you're playing with the thought. You're letting that thought gain momentum. You're having a thought attack. It gains momentum, and as it gains momentum, it grabs emotional energy. And as it grabs emotional energy, it leads to more thoughts, which leads to more emotional energy. And pretty soon, you've got a vortex swirling around based in your thoughts that are just thoughts. Now, some people are going to want to continue to do that. Some people aren't want to give that up. You know, I've been talking about responsibility and all those other pieces, and some people don't want to say, I can take responsibility for my thought process. Some people are going to say, nope, that's still that other person's fault. Understand, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. Just recognize that that leaves you at the mercy of your thoughts. And our mind is not a good friend. It can be, but it's not necessarily a good friend when we just embrace everything it says without saying, well, that's a thought. So just remind yourself, this is going to take some time and some energy. Because the other thing we're used to is getting a little emotional charge out of those thoughts. And emotional charges do a couple things. One is it releases endorphins in our brain, dopamine and endorphins. So it kind of gives us a good feeling shot. You know, when after we're upset, then there's a release of chemicals in your brain that sometimes we get used to getting a little charge. It's kind of like being addicted to bad thinking. And so you have to change a little bit of that. You find other places where your mind can then enjoy being joyful and contented. But initially, a lot of people find that they actually get a charge out of being negatively emotive. Feeling negative emotions actually gets them an emotional charge. And it also relieves them of responsibility because when we're having a negative emotion, we're pointing the finger at somebody else. Our thoughts are pointing to somebody else. So it's going to take a little bit of practice. It's going to take a little bit of effort because the other thing that happens with thoughts is we're creating neuronal pathways. And pathways end up being like grooves. And those grooves are the easiest place for us to fall back into. So as you create those patterns of thoughts, of holding on to those thoughts, of pondering those thoughts, of entertaining those thoughts, the groove gets easier and easier and more deeply embedded, and we trace it down, we track it down, and every time we fall back into it and we try and we fall back into it until we change the neuronal pathways. And the only way to change a neuronal pathway is to stay on top of it. Having a negative emotion, what am I thinking about? Got to let that go. That's the pattern. Okay, so what happens if you have gotten so used to that pattern that you can't stop it, that you can't just let it go? What happens if you have an emotional charge that's gained a foothold and you can't just let it go? Okay, and then there are a couple of things you can do. If you can't shake it, I want you to imagine a big stop sign. Just picture it in your head, a huge stop sign, and yell to yourself, stop. That doesn't mean out loud. You know, if you're in the middle of the store and you're imagining the stop sign and you're screaming stop, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about in your mind, yell it. Make it a loud yell in your mind. Hear your mind yelling stop. And what that does is it begins to teach the mind to stop just kind of playing around with that thought, to move to something else. Okay, so what happens if it still has a foothold? Then you want to find a distraction. You want to break the pattern. Sometimes breaking the pattern means that, you know, you can play maybe a game that takes enough thought on your mind that you can't be thinking about something else. A little concentration. Not a lot of concentration, but some game on your smartphone or your computer or your tablet, just long enough to distract you. Or maybe you do a little exercise. It's very hard to have those thoughts when you're counting up to 20 doing push-ups or pull-ups or sit-ups or whatever. So do something active. Find something that will distract you, and find something that's not a chemical. And food, by the way, is a chemical. One of the things that people often do is they treat their thinking by eating. You know, they get so tired of the thinking and the emotions that they eat, or they drink, or they take some other substance in their body to stop that process. But you can teach your body to do that without having to use those distractions. But find something else that will distract you. Here's what I promise you. If you do this consistently, you'll be teaching your mind that when you want to let it go, you'll let it go. And then what you find is once you've let that thought go, your emotions, it will take a few minutes, but your emotions will begin to come back to the more positive area. See, the reason this is not about the power of positive thinking is because positive thinking means that you have to come up with a positive thought to replace your negative thought. The problem with that is eventually you say, well, I can't think of any more positive thoughts, and then you're having a negative thought. This is just about understanding that a thought, whether it is positive or it is negative, is just a thought. And so if you can find something, you know, sometimes people will find a quote or something that they really love. That can be helpful as a distraction. But this is not about the power of positive thinking, that somehow you have to come up with a positive counterpoint to every negative counterpoint. That's just chasing around, and it's trying. The brain will then work to find enough negative to see if you can really keep up. So don't do that. Don't let the mind play the games. It's not about how this is all about reality. There is a reality out there. There are things that are happening. Your response to that reality is based in your thoughts, based in your core belief. You can find better ways of getting to the higher emotions simply by not thinking about the things that are driving you to lower emotions. That doesn't mean your head's in the sand. I'm not talking about not doing, you know, any work or not ever having a thought in your head. I'm talking about being aware that the thoughts are leading to your emotional life. If you want to have a conversation about what's bothering you, at least make sure that what's bothering you is based in not just your thinking that has gone awry, and that you actually have the possibility of assuming that maybe your thinking is a little bit off base, that you're not perceiving everything just as reality. And when you do that, you are telling yourself very clearly over and over, a thought is a thought. Not a thought is nothing, but a thought is not ultimately important. A thought is just that. A thought is a thought. Okay, let me know how that fits for you. Let me know how that flows for you and whether that makes sense, what other questions you have about that. If you're on the blog, the Save the Marriage blog, and you can find that at savethemarriageblog.com. If you're on that now, you can leave a comment and just say how that resonates with you, what you disagree with, what you don't like about that, what makes sense to you about that. Let's have a dialogue about this, because this is a crucial piece for many people to find peace in their lives. This is a puzzle piece that can fit into place and make you have a peaceful life just by this one little shift. So let me know how that fits for you. Also, if you found this to be useful, it would be so helpful if you would help me spread the word. And you can do that in a couple of ways. One, my guess is if you've listened to this, you've realized that this would be helpful information for anyone. Not just if you're trying to save your marriage. So please feel free, and I invite you, and I would request that you go to iTunes, if you listen with iTunes, and just leave a review in the podcast area. You can just do a search in the iTunes store for Save the Marriage podcast, and just leave a review. Let people know what you like about it. And that will help spread the word. The more people see the reviews, the more they're likely to listen, and the more they're likely to find some impact on their own life. If you're on Twitter, you can help me so much. I've created a place where it just pre-populates your tweet, and all you have to do is hit send. All you need to do is type into your browser, in your internet browser, wherever you are, smartphone or on your computer or tablet or wherever. Just go to whatever browser you use to surf the internet and type in savethemarriage.com/love. That's savethemarriage.com/love. When you do that, it's going to create a link automatically in your Twitter feed. You just hit send, and or you can change it. You can say whatever you want, and that'll let people find it too, and that helps. So we can spread the word and let people find some other ways of being more helpful in their thinking. The other thing is, if you have some thoughts about what you'd like to hear about on the podcast, I get a couple, three, four, or five, sometimes six a week of people saying, hey, can we cover this? just send it to me at podcast@savethemarriage.com. That's podcast@savethemarriage.com. That's not a place for saying, hey, can you help me save my marriage? That's a place to let me know what you would like to hear on the podcast. There are other ways of contacting us about getting help, but that's just about the podcast. Okay. So podcast@savethemarriage.com. That's a great way. Oh, and by the way, if you really are ready to change those core beliefs, just grab my book at Amazon. You can find it at savethemarriage.com/Kindle, and that'll take you right to the page where you can either get the softback or the Kindle version. Either one's available to you. Okay, thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. Help me spread the word. I wish you the best as you continue to save your marriage and as you continue to become aware of how your thoughts are shaping your world, and then you become aware that a thought is just a thought.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.